views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of 55KRC, The Talk Station, and Clear Channel Worldwide.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, Cincinnati's only gun talk show. Join us. We're going to explore the topic of firearms and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. Now here's your host, John Johnston, on 55KRZ, The Talk Station.
Good Sunday evening, everybody. Welcome to Ballistic Radio. I'm your host, John Johnston, in the studio with president of Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. He's going to be my co-host tonight, Mr. Kyle Hufford, and you can find us online at ballisticradio.com. We're going to spend just a couple minutes talking about the show format. It's a new show for everybody. Just want to let everyone know what's going on. Just full disclosure, too, I work at Kyle's Gun Shop. Still not trying to sell you anything. So anyway, Mr. Hufford.
Yes, my name's Kyle Hufford. I am the president of Kyle's Gun Shop, as John said. I just want to take a minute to talk and, you know, let you guys know a couple things. You know, this is our show. We're obviously, you know, putting up the money to get this thing going and all that. And I just want to let everybody know that we intend to put on a good show with some good info. We're not here to be an infomercial for our shop. You know, we're not going to make people pay for airtime to come on and pitch stuff. We're going to have real guests and talk about real issues that are affecting you, the law-abiding gun owner. Feel free to send us your show ideas at our email address, info@ballisticradio.com, and make sure you check out our website, www.ballisticradio.com. And you can also like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. With that said, I'm pretty much going to pass this off to John. I'm only going to be co-hosting tonight, and I'm probably going to come back for the show next week just because this is our first show. It's kind of what they call the soft opening. They didn't really do any promos for us this week. They're going to start running promos next week, and you know, so everybody will know we're actually going to be here. So I'm probably going to come back and kind of talk about the same things. But John's going to be the main host, and I got a couple co-hosts lined up to kind of help him out. You know, after we get this off the ground this week and next week, we have a bunch of other guys that'll be helping him out, and we've also got some good guests lined up here in the next few weeks. Also excited to report that I've been talking to John Benner from TDI, and he'll be coming on the show sometime in April.
Oh, that'll be pretty exciting, too, to have him in. Just in general, if anyone has any comments, any suggestions, I'm around to talk to you outside of the show. Like Kyle said, check out ballisticradio.com. I'm putting some articles up as I get the time, where I sort of just talk about some of the things that I think are important for everyone to know, or maybe not so important, but just I want to talk about them. So, hey. In addition to Mr. Benner in April, we've got some other interesting folks. Specifically tonight, we're going to have Derek DeBross on, OhioGunLawyer.com. Great guy, great attorney. Does pretty primarily just gun stuff, rights restoration, NFA trust, things of that nature. Going to just be talking with him about some of the important things that you might want to know, especially if you carry a gun day to day, specifically use of force, what you need to do to get a concealed carry permit and hold on to one after you get it. Just make sure you don't do anything stupid. But just again, I really want this to be everybody's show. So you can get a hold of me, john@ballisticradio.com. If you have any questions, anything like that.
Or stop in and talk to him at the shop. He works Tuesday through Friday.
Yeah, that. Yeah, you can do that too, but I'm occasionally in a bad mood, so if I say something mean to you, I apologize. Yeah, but, you know, just any suggestions, any comments, anything like that. I'm mainly going to be focusing on gear reviews, law, things like that. I'm not much of a politician. I really wish I didn't have to pay attention to it all. Obviously, if there's some legislation coming up that's going to affect everyone, I want to spend some time covering that. But as far as one side or the other of the issue, I don't really like anybody too much. So don't expect to hear any of that on here.
We'll have anybody on the show, Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, as long as you're doing something pro-gun.
Yeah. Hey, we might even have some anti-gun people on. I'd kind of like to hear what they have to say, too, spend some time getting into that. You know, just because I don't agree with you doesn't mean I don't want to hear your opinion, because honestly, that's kind of what's awesome about the country we live in. at least for right now. So we'll see what happens. Anyway, so later on, Derek DeBross, like we said, come into the shop, talk to us whenever you'd like to. In addition to Kyle, we've got some people from OFCC, Ohioans for Concealed Carry, at least folks that I know from there that are going to be on the show with me, helping the host. You know, so it's not all going to be my opinion on things, because honestly, I'm wrong about all sorts of stuff all the time.
I can attest to that.
Yeah, I bet you can. I'd like to think I'm right more often than not, but hey, you know, no one really is. Just in general, though, we want everybody to be safe. We want everyone to be responsible. Ideally, and I kind of talked about this on the website the other day, but we really all want to be ambassadors for the sport and for, you know, for lack of a better term, the movement, the gun movement. You run into a lot of people when you're talking about anything where, you know, you're completely biased against what they're saying just based off of who they are or how they're saying it. And one of the important things, I think, is that, you know, to present the gun industry and the sports just in a positive light and kind of an intelligent light, as opposed to the redneck hillbilly aspect that some of the people that don't know any better tend to think about us. Not that I'm not a redneck. I kind of am a little bit. But, you know, I think I have something to say as well outside of I like eating red meat, you know. So it's going to be important, and you're going to see me stressing this a lot, to where we handle ourselves responsibly, especially when we're at the range. Big fan the four rules as far as handling firearms, and I'll get into that more online and probably on the show a little bit too at a later date when we're specifically covering that. But you're not going to hear me say anything that's too off the wall as far as tactics or techniques that are going to get people hurt. Ideally, you know, I'd like to educate everybody, sort of help correct some misconceptions that you hear people say at shops. I've got my own little pet peeves that, as they come up, will probably be readily apparent to everyone. Just because I tend to get fired up pretty easy, and I'm going to try not to.
We're definitely going to work hard to try and not spread any misinformation. We're going to try to bring factual information. You know, we feel that's really important, that, you know, we have all the right answers. We may not have all the right answers, but if we don't have them, we'll figure out what they are.
And not only figure out what they are, but just make sure we're not saying anything that's wrong. You know, and there are all sorts of things you hear people say that are absolutely wrong, you know, and just we're going to try real hard not to be doing that. And like I said, I'm sorry to repeat myself, but just feel free to contact us at the shop. Get a hold of us, you know, online. Really want to make it about everybody, not just about us. Not trying to sell you anything at all. Don't have an agenda as far as that goes. But anyway, coming up next on Ballistic Radio, Ohio gun lawyer Derek DeBross. You're going to want to stay with us through the break. We're going to be getting into some pretty great things. You are listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station.
And Wise, the Steve Perrin Coordinated Financial Planning Studios. This is 55 KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station. Brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. Joining us in studio, we've got Derek DeBroth from OhioGunLawyer.com. How you doing tonight, Derek?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on to the show. So we're going to try and bombard you with questions about law stuff. I'll try not to make any lawyer jokes while you're here, too, because I do appreciate you stopping by.
I probably heard all of them.
You probably have, you know, and you know you're a shooter, too, so I don't want to get... Anyway, I guess we're going to start off with concealed carry, since that seems to be of interest to a lot of people lately, especially with the direction...
Getting more and more popular every day.
Yeah, go figure. Police layoffs. Seems like a bad idea. But anyway, concealed carry... who's eligible to get one of those, pretty much?
Well, in Ohio, I mean, there are several requirements to get a concealed handgun license, and let me be very clear that it is a concealed handgun license in Ohio, not a concealed weapons license. So Unfortunately, most people in the state of Ohio, including most sheriffs, call it a CCW license. That actually is incorrect. It is a CHL, concealed handgun license. But pretty much anybody, you got to be 21, got to take some training, a course, 12-hour course, either put on by the NRA or APATA. And then you have to qualify under certain criminal background check requirements, and then you go make your applications, and you get the license. Depending on the county, it'll take longer or shorter amount of time. I knew New Franklin County. Last I talked to their chief deputy on the concealed carry application office, said that I think they're scheduling about a month and a half out right
well,
now.
There's a new sheriff in town, and they've been doing it a lot faster. We've heard of people that have been picking them up.
In Hamilton County?
Yeah.
Same day or next day.
Yeah, in Franklin County, it's a 24-hour turnaround.
Yep.
But to get the appointment, it takes like a month and a half
right.
to get in the office.
So they're pretty much essentially doing the same amount of time. You just, once you make it down there,
right.
don't have to wait quite
there
as
for
long.
A while. Hamilton was taking, you know, so long to do it, they'd make you almost wait the whole 45 days. So a lot of instructors would recommend people going to Claremont because they have walk-in hours, and they were usually turning them around about a week. But from what I understand, Hamilton's been getting a lot better.
And since the law passed, I've been, nowadays everything is pretty good with most sheriff's office. They got the hang of it. You know, at first there was a lot of pushback and there was a lot of things going on that shouldn't have been going on. But now, especially the bigger counties, they got their head on straight.
I think a lot of them are starting to realize that it's a revenue generator for them.
And it is.
They didn't want to look at it that way to begin with.
Right.
And that's a whole different topic, and I won't get onto that because that kind of annoys me, but I guess I understand it. Just to be clear, if you qualify to get the concealed handgun license as far as you meet all the requirements, they have to give it to you, right?
Yeah, Ohio is what we call a shall issue state as opposed to certain other states like California where it's a may issue state where the local sheriff can give the license out to all his crony friends. No, Ohio has to issue it. And in fact, Ohio has to issue the license within 45 days, which doesn't always happen. But no one ever really sues a sheriff on the time limit thing, because by the time you get it into the courts, he'll have issued the license and you would have wasted, you know, $15,000 on hiring Derek DeBrosse to go after the sheriff for you.
Oh, well, that sounds like a deal right there. pretty much, all right, you've gotten your concealed handgun license. You are freshly minted as an armed citizen. You are out and about. Occasionally you run into these little, and what I like to call them is gun buster signs, where a business or establishment has said, hey, you know what, for whatever reason, we want to place more importance on the criminal's ability to ignore this sign than the law-abiding citizen who's more likely to pay attention to it. But anyway, my question for you, different signage, different postings, how's that work as far as where can you carry? Where can't you carry? Improper posting. If you could just walk through that with us real quick.
Simply put, there's basically two ways that carry is prohibited. And when we talk about carry under concealed carry law, we mean carrying the weapon concealed.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily apply to open carrying, but that's a whole different discussion, maybe for a different show.
Yeah, I'll talk about that too one day. So.
But however, so you have statutorily or by law, prohibited places, things that you just can't carry.
Mm-hmm.
Airport terminals, daycare centers, churches, unless your pastor allows you to do it, those sorts of places. And then there is private property where they put up what I call criminal protection zone signs.
Right.
Or CPZs, you might heard them call. Actually, my client, Ohioans for Concealed Carry, has a list where they list all these people and you should not patronize their establishments. So if they have to sign up, it's got to be conspicuously located, meaning it's got to be readily apparent that they have the sign. And they do give a suggestive sign in the law itself, in the Attorney General's handbook. They have, like, basically, it's probably like an 8x9 sign, you know, the big circle with the slash through it says no guns.
You have to knowingly violate that.
I believe that's correct. Again, it comes down to whether or not the sign is conspicuous. A lot of times, especially on movie theaters, you'll see, you know, those transparent stickers on the window of the door, and it has all that language and gobbledygook in it.
I've never seen one of those. What are you talking about,
Derek? You probably haven't.
No.
Well, in the lower right-hand corner, they got the no gun signs, real, real small and minute.
So. I don't think I heard you there. But, no, I guess another question I wanted to ask, too, because I was having a conversation with someone the other day about this, and I'm pretty sure they were wrong, but I wanted to bring it up since you were here. You see some signs that are worded, unless otherwise allowed by law. And, you know, you hear that as far as you know, oh, you can carry in here with a permit. It's just for the people that don't have the permit. And I'm like, no, I don't think that's what that is. But have you seen those as far as...
When the sign first came out, I believe that's what most of them said, and I believe they've corrected that. But it is an interesting legal argument. I am unaware of any case law that has challenged that. But it's an argument I sure would make in court if it does say unless otherwise authorized by law. You know, you're authorized by law to carry a concealed weapon. So it's ambiguous. It's confusing. So the purpose of the sign is put the patron on notice. And if you're not on notice, how can you obey the order?
Right, right. And that's, I don't know. Doesn't make much sense to me either. But just to be clear too, if for whatever reason you've missed one of those signs or you're silly and decide to ignore the sign, which I don't suggest for anyone. If you see the sign, just don't spend your money there. I know some folks will tell you, oh, I'll take your gun out, go in there. No, no, they don't deserve your business. But let's say for whatever reason you violate that, knowingly, unknowingly, whatever. What are the penalties if you are to do that as far as that goes?
Don't have the law right in front of me, but last I checked, what I can recollect, it's a fourth-degree misdemeanor. Punishable up to, I believe, 30 days in jail, maybe a $250 fine.
Revocation of your permit as well, I believe? Or?
No, I can't recall. I think, if anything, it'd be a suspension.
Okay.
Probably about a year. Don't quote me on that. Don't have it in front of me.
No, I'm sorry. I popped you. Surprise question. My bad. I apologize. Switching directions, just real quick. We've talked about signage. God forbid you get into a situation where you need to use your firearm, at least you think you need to use your firearm. What are the things that you have to meet to be legally justified in using deadly force against another person? I'll cover dogs in a second because that one I'm more familiar with. But against human beings, what's the law there?
So use of what we call justified deadly force in the state of Ohio, there's three elements. First element is you cannot have created the situation that gave rise to the incident that necessitates deadly force. So you can't start the fight.
And that seems to be something that gets some people in problems, or at least lets the public perceive there's an issue there as far as who started what. But
right.
And sorry to interrupt. Please continue.
No, that's fine. The second element is in Ohio, we have a rule called a duty to retreat, and you must retreat if you can safely do so before you use deadly force in Ohio. Now, after the Castle Doctrine passed, I believe in 2008 or 9, that no longer applies to your home, your car, or an immediate family member's car. So,
and they just recently changed that, too, where it was a little ambiguous as far as the Castle Doctrine in vehicles. It used to be, too, if it wasn't even an immediate family member, it's pretty much if you were in a car. And I think they just changed that where it was pretty much a whole bunch of misunderstandings, but it does have to be either your car or someone pretty darn close to you as far as that goes.
I believe
right?
It's immediate family member.
Right.
Yeah.
Third
so,
one.
So yeah, you can't violate the duty to retreat. If you can escape, you need to do so safely. And then third, and really the core of deadly force self-defense is you have to have an honest and reasonable belief that the force being used against you would have caused an immediate death or serious bodily harm, not just bodily harm, but serious bodily harm, for instance, rape.
Right.
And it's got to be immediate. Can't be someone coming up to you saying, I'm going to shoot you tomorrow at high noon.
Yeah.
It's got to be an immediate threat.
And just to be clear, too, is that a reasonable man level as far as that goes, or have they really done much into that yet?
It's something that law students spend a lot of time trying to understand in Ohio. To make it easy, what the jury's really going to do is they're going to say, what would I have done? In all honesty, that's what they're going to do.
Right.
But it's an objective and subjective standard in Ohio. It's kind of a weird situation because we have this honest and reasonable belief. So you have to honestly believe it, and it must be a reasonable belief.
Right. And just to be clear, too, there's been a lot of talk about Castle Doctrine lately, or in different states, the Make My Day Law, or whatever you want to call it. Just to be very, very clear, all that does is remove the duty to retreat as far as you still have to be in fear for yourself and you still have to have not caused the situation, correct?
Well, the Castro Doctrine did a lot of things, but on the criminal front, that's the core of it. The reason why we call it a castle doctrine is because a man's home is his castle, so there's no longer a duty to retreat. It's your Alamo. Where else can you possibly retreat?
Yeah, exactly.
So that is correct. You still have to meet the elements of self-defense, though. You can't just shoot somebody because they came onto your property.
Well, and, you know, that seems to be something that a lot of non-gun people like to rail against the castle doctrine laws is all blood in the streets, which seems to be what everyone always screams when a new gun law gets passed that's favorable to gun people. That's not how it is, folks. You still have to pretty much be a decent person, minding your business, presented with a bad, bad situation, where that's the only way that you can resolve it. So just be clear there. No one's trying to go out and pick fights or, this is going to be fun to shoot somebody. No, not really, because there's quite a few legal fees involved with justifiable homicide in the state of Ohio, I would imagine.
Yeah, if you're carrying your gun on you, you should definitely be doing everything you can to try and de-escalate the situation if you get into a confrontation.
No, and certainly, and that's just, I know when I started carrying, it was amazing how much calmer I was when I was dealing with people, because the consequences of me being a jerk was a little bit higher than it used to be.
And not only calmer, but you find yourself being much more aware of your surroundings.
Well, I was already paranoid before I started carrying a gun, but I know what you're saying. And it's funny, too. Just you hear people talk, and, you know, it's just crazy. But, you know, we're going to be talking about some more things in a little bit with Derek. Rights restoration specifically, interesting topic, I think, at least. I'm actually not too familiar with it, so this will be informative for me as well. You know, we're all dumb sometimes. We all do stupid things when we're younger. Like I said, when we get back, we're going to talk a little bit about firearm disability and rights restoration. Anyway, you are listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Hey, it's Brian Thomas, Monday in the Morning Show. I'm sure something has gotten underneath my dad's skin, and we'll find out about it together during the spleen vent. Tune in, 705, 55 KRC, the talk station.
Hey, welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station. Ballistic Radio is brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, and we're still talking to the Ohio gun lawyer, Derek DeBross. Check out OhioGunLawyer.com if you ever want to get a hold of Derek. That's probably the best way to do it. So, rights restoration. If you want to take a little bit of time, Derek, just fill me in, because I've really never dealt in this side of things, because I've always been pretty good at, you know, not doing stupid things, or at least not getting caught doing stupid things.
Well, at least you think.
Well, yeah, I'm sure I've got a file somewhere, especially now that I'm on the radio. But
real complicated area of the law. I mean, it's really complicated, way too complicated to go into all the specifics over the air today. But in a nutshell, we have federal and state law, and they don't always jive together. But both have a laundry list of what we call disabilities. So when we say gun disabilities, we don't mean you're physically handicapped. We mean you're legally handicapped. You're not allowed to own a gun because either the state of Ohio or the federal government told you can't. Most common ones are felonies. Domestic violence crimes, drug offenses, things like that. Some of the more unknown ones could be civil protection orders. For instance, most people don't know this, but when you get a divorce, a lot of times some common language we put into divorce decrees is, I will not harass, stalk, or do anything bad to my ex-wife. Well, that is a protection order under the Gun Control Act if it's written a certain way.
Well, and I guess that just really depends on what principality you're in as far as different counties handle it differently, I suppose.
Right.
But just something to be concerned about is, you just want to be paying attention to pretty much everything that's going on.
What I always tell a lot of my clients is that, you know, there is a difference between a lawyer who likes guns and a gun lawyer. I mean, really understanding this stuff has taken me 4.5 years. But at the end of the day, if you're a gun owner and you value those rights, whether it's a divorce or a crime, you need to make sure you have someone who understands what's going to be the effect of the end result on your gun rights.
Oh, yeah, of course, because once they're gone, it's sort of hard to get them back without paying a little bit of money and going through a little bit of a hassle as far as all that goes. So is there specific, I guess, severities when you're talking about rights restoration? Is, you know, is that case by case, or are there okay, this one's going to be easy because it's not that big of a deal, or this one's just not going to happen, period? Or can you get into that a little bit as far as who can get their rights restored?
Yeah, most anybody, and I say that with emphasis, most anybody can get their rights back if they have an attorney that understands the law. I mean, some crimes are very difficult to fix. For instance, misdemeanor crimes of domestic violence are very difficult to fix. And I've been able to do it in the past, but there involves a lot of luck. Some of the things that are impossible to fix, federal convictions, federal felonies, almost next impossible to fix. Absent a presidential pardon, there's almost nothing I can do unless you fall into some of the weird anomaly exemptions, like certain white-collar business crimes, that sort of thing. But basically, the process is simple depending on the crime, but it is a very individual thing. A large part of what we do is file restoration actions where we petition the court to grant the client his gun rights back if they've been lost. You can actually do that in Ohio. You can ask the court for it.
So I guess, I'm going to assume that since you do rights restoration, I have a feeling I know your thoughts on it, but you can almost make the argument that if someone has committed a felony or a misdemeanor that puts them under disability, getting their rights back, is that a good thing, do you think? I honestly don't know how I feel about that because I haven't given it much thought. I'm a constitutionalist, and I know that they didn't intend for that, so I guess I would tend to fall on that side of things. But what are your thoughts, sir?
Well, two things come to mind. One is obviously the constitutionality of it, whether or not it's constitutional to take away a felon's gun rights. They are, it is a right pursuant to how the founders drafted our founding documents given by God, so you can make the argument that the government doesn't have the power to take the rights. But on a more practical level, most people make mistakes. I'm a big believer in redemption. I'm a criminal defense lawyer. People make mistakes. And most of my clients, for instance, I just got a guy who has gun rights back who hasn't touched a gun in over 30 years. He was 18, committed a burglary, made a mistake. He's in his, I believe, 70s. He's about to die of a disease that he's got. And all he wants to do is take his grandson hunting. That's all he wants to do. So I'm a big believer in redemption. People make mistakes. Some people get caught, some people don't. I'm sure there's plenty of things I've done when I was a young kid where I probably should not be able to own guns.
Well, and most people, if they've only got like one thing on the record, they could probably just get their record sealed and be done with it, right?
That's a whole other discussion. It depends on the crime, and it depends on whether or not the federal government agrees that Ohio's expungement process really works, because for federal disability, you have to have an expungement. Ohio doesn't expunge records. We seal them.
Okay.
Well, I mean, like if it's an Ohio law or whatever.
If it's an Ohio disability, see, there's case law on it, I believe out of Summit County actually, that specifically says you need to take an additional step besides expunging the record. You need to go through the restoration process.
So even if you get it sealed, you still have to have your rights restored by court?
Potentially.
Okay. And just to be clear too, and when I brought up earlier the constitutionality of it, and as you guys listen, you'll see I'm a constitutionalist, but anyway. Firearms disabilities is a relatively new concept as far as, in the scope of our national history with, we are a gun culture in the United States. We have been before there was a United States. But, gun laws in general really didn't, start to come into play at all until the 20th century for the most part, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I'm not a historian by any means or a legal historian, but from my understanding is, you have the National Firearms Act, which highly regulates machine guns, suppressors, sawed-off shotguns, short-barrel rifles, things like that, from the Al Capone days, because you could buy a Thompson submachine gun and 45 cal from a Popular Science magazine for $25 through the mail. And then second of all, you have the Gun Control Act that passed right around the Kennedy assassination, and a lot of those disabilities are designed from the gentleman who shot John F. Kennedy. I believe his name was Lee Harvey Oswald.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that guy before. if it's all right with you, Derek, we've got a gentleman on the line that that has a question. Do you mind taking a phone call?
No, absolutely. Go ahead. That's fine.
So we're going to be talking to Eric here. Eric, are you on?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So you've got a question about gun rights as far as your daughter's concerned, or can you explain a little bit as far as the situation?
Yeah, my daughter has a concealed carry license. She's 22. and she happens to currently, I bought a gun vault for the car. It's got, you know, a cable lock that runs to the, you know, frame and all that other stuff so that the gun can be stored safely when it's not, when she's not carrying it. She is also currently dating a less than reputable person who happens to have multiple felony convictions and serve time, and whether or not he's capable of rehabilitation, not part of the conversation.
Right.
What is, I know he's not allowed to drive the car with the gun in the vault, or the gun in the vehicle. You know, can he be in the car when she's carrying? Can she be hanging out with him when she's carrying? I don't know. I'm just curious.
Well, I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to let Derek take it since he's a professional. Derek, thoughts?
I think yes. As long as she's not creating a situation where she is knowingly creating a situation where he would be able to possess the firearm, okay. I believe she'd be okay. You know, she's allowed to date whoever she wants, and she doesn't give up her Second Amendment right because of that.
Right, I know, and my issue's not with that. It's just I don't want her to get in trouble for doing something, and just because of the fact that he's just physically there, she's going to catch.
You know, the facts could be twisted by the law enforcement officer who arrives on scene if there was an incident. It's not a great situation that she's putting herself in. I'm not going to say that.
Yeah.
So pretty much though. Just my understanding of it, and, you know, I believe as long as she's maintaining control of the firearm and he has zero access to it, she should be good to go, right, Derek?
I think that's a good statement, a good way to put it, I guess. As long as she's not knowingly or helping him possess the gun, and he's not in the car by himself with the gun,
or doing straw purchases for him, or
yeah,
something
buying
like
a gun
that.
For him, letting him pick out the gun, and. He actually, just so you know, might automatically have been restored to his rights under Ohio law. So
okay.
he might not even be disqualified.
Okay. Well, he's not the kind of person I would want to ever see with a handgun. So
yeah.
he's got firearm related felonies.
Oh,
so.
Lovely.
Well. Yeah, that's like I said. The rehabilitation issue is not the topic of the conversation because I don't particularly think he is. However. That's beside the point.
Well, it sounds like Eric, as long as your daughter's not giving him the gun or she's making sure that she's in control of it, you should be good to go.
Okay.
But I appreciate you calling in. I hope you enjoy the rest of your evening.
Oh, you too. Thank you.
Thanks, Eric. Yeah, interesting question there as far as, you know, really kind of the gray areas in the law as far as, you know, what can get us in trouble, what can't get us in trouble. If anybody else has any more questions, local, 513-749-5500. If you're not in Cincinnati, want to talk to us, 800-823-TALK, T-A-L-K, 8255. So kind of going back just for a second, Derek, have you found, you mentioned earlier, domestic violence, harder to get rights restoration on that versus, you know, some felonies, or
it is as a result of several Supreme Court cases that have come down over the years. Basically, when we talk about rights restoration, we're looking at your three core rights of voting, holding office, and serving on a jury. But if you haven't lost those rights, how do you get them restored? And someone convicted of a misdemeanor doesn't lose those rights in Ohio, so therefore they can't have them restored, and therefore their gun rights don't come along with it. So it puts you in this weird position where it could actually be better that you were convicted of a felony.
Huh. That's weird. That's weird how that works. You know, and I kind of want to stay on the whole rights issue just for another minute. We're going to be talking about some other things that you handle later on in the show. And I know we were kind of talking about this earlier. You were saying that certain federal laws, you know, versus local laws, but anyway, we'll get into that. We are going to be talking about next suppressors, machine guns, short-barreled rifles. You can't just go buy them at a gun store, but they are legal to own. Coming up, find out about Class 3 items, how you can purchase them. You are listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Glenn Beck.
This will blow your mind.
Tomorrow at 9:06 on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. We're going to talk Class 3 with Derek DeBross, the Ohio Gun Lawyer, ohiogunlawyer.com. Just real quick, Derek, Class 3 items, what are they, what aren't they? Do you mind getting into that a little bit?
Real quick, again, another misnomer or misstatement of the term. It's actually a Title II firearm. Class 3 is the type of license that someone like Kyle here has at his gun shop to sell these items. But basically, in essence, they're machine guns, which means that you pull the trigger once and it sprays a bunch of ammunition out of the barrel. Suppressors. We don't have. There's no such thing as silencers, by the way. They don't really exist except in Star Trek. Short-barreled rifles and then short-barreled shotguns. And then, like, novelty guns, like a pen gun or a cane gun or a wallet gun or something like that.
Right. And that would be, I guess you're classified separately as far as you've got any other weapons, AOWs, which would be... Which ones out of those?
Because basically your AOWs or any other weapons are your novelty guns, and oftentimes your sawed off shotguns.
So like the Serbu Super Shorty would be
right.
An AOW. Reason I ask and reason I make the distinction: there's a different tax stamp for the Title II firearm versus the AOW. One's a $200 tax stamp. One's a $5 one, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I have no idea why the numbers are that drastically different. No clue why.
Who knows? They do all sorts of different things. Destructive devices, too. Kind of interesting thing, and I actually didn't know this until I started looking at them. Grenade launchers, things like that. Actually legal to buy, but you're also paying the tax on each round of ammunition outside of smoke and practice, I think.
I believe that's correct. I've never had a client retain me to look into the issue, but I do know that you can get them on the market.
Nah, they're not that fun. I played with them in the Army. No big deal. Anyway, so you got a couple different ways that you can purchase those. And correct me if I'm wrong, you can buy them as an individual or you can buy them as part of a trust. How's that work?
Yeah, you can buy them as an individual or you can buy them as part of an entity, which includes trust, associations, corporations, LLCs, things like that. But the most commonly used one is the trust, or what most people call the gun trust. There's a lot of benefits to using the gun trust.
Okay, is that you kind of said it a little bit, but is it preferable to do it that way for reasons other? Well, there's a couple reasons that I think they're beneficial to do it as part of a trust, but what are the pros and cons of either approach, do you think?
The biggest pro and the biggest reason why a client comes to me and wants a gun trust or a gun LLC, and I do both, is to avoid the sheriff having to be informed about the purchase and signing off. Because a lot of times sheriffs won't sign off simply because it's political. Really, they have no good reason. I served 6 years in the military. I've handled all sorts of guns, and my sheriff won't sign off for me, and I'm more than competent to handle a short-barreled rifle.
That's funny. And the other interesting thing, too, is a lot of times, especially when we're talking about short-barreled rifles, and they offer advantages, but ballistically not as effective as the ones that you can go in and purchase right off the shelf. But, hey, when they start making rules, they don't always make sense. Gun Trust, Gun LLC, assuming you don't want to deal with the local law enforcement, and also, too, if you have family members that you want to be in possession of the firearm or what have you, is it easier to do it that way as well? Or
yeah, I mean, the law says that only the owner can possess it. So when you have an individual buying it, that's the only person that can possess it. With the trust can have multiple members or what we call trustees. So when a dealer calls me and says, you know, this husband and wife want to buy this, you know, someone like Kyle calls me, and I do recommend Kyle shop for Class 3 weapons. We do a trust, and we put both the husband and wife on the trust so they both can possess the weapons. You also get in the situation, if the wife doesn't want to shoot the gun, she lives in the house, and she has what we call constructive possession of the gun.
Right.
So it creates a problem.
Well, and unless you keep your office door locked and she doesn't know the combination of the safe,
right.
They're technically in possession of it, whether or not they still touch it.
Well, and if they've got kids, too, they could put their kids on there for, you know, later on when they pass on, and it could be passed down to them.
Yeah, there's probate benefits, which is one of my favorite things about it. It preserves the beneficial interest in a very expensive piece of equipment for after you die, so the ETF is not just coming in and confiscating the weapon.
Because if you do it as an individual, when you pass on, it either has to be transferred to another Class 3 dealer or destroyed or surrendered.
It goes through probate process, and who knows what happens when it goes through the probate process. I mean, it gets very complicated. It gets very expensive to handle it because you're paying an attorney most likely to handle it.
Okay. So you can purchase one of the Title II items as far as, is there like a delineation between, hey, I can buy a gun, but for whatever reason, I can't buy a suppressor or a short-barreled rifle.
There's not. As long as you can buy a gun, you can buy, these are considered firearms. Now, to buy them from a dealer, you got to be 21. But you can be 18, and as long as Ohio doesn't restrict possession of them, and they don't, as far as possession is concerned, if you're on the registry, you can buy these. Now, their use in Ohio gets a little bit more cloudy, let's say. But I will tell you that anybody who owns these in Ohio is not being prosecuted for their use.
Okay. If it's all right with you, Derek, we've got a question about gun trusts, and I'm going to get to them right now. Dave, you're on Ballistic Radio. What can I help you with, gun trusts?
Yeah, Garrett, a question for Eric. I was wondering, does the trust have to be set up in the state that you reside in?
No, it does not.
Okay.
We have something under the United States Constitution called the Full Faith and Credit Clause. A contract in one state is good at another. Now, I will tell you this. If you create a gun trust in Nevada and you're sending it in from Ohio and the address of the gun that you want to purchase is in Ohio, the auditor that you send it to is going to be the Ohio auditor, and she's going to be looking at Ohio law. So if Nevada has something funny that Ohio doesn't, they may reject it.
Okay.
But it doesn't mean that it's illegal or anything like that. Legally, it just has to be a valid trust.
Okay. Okay. You got time for another quick question? Is there once you get the trust established, I'm assuming you do it with the first purchase you make, additional purchases, do you have to add those in each time, or is, once the trust is established, you have carte blanche for whatever you purchase?
Every time you buy something, you have to send the ETF a copy of the trust.
Okay. Okay.
Any other questions, Dave?
No, thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem. You have a good evening. So I guess, and you mentioned the auditor, now, one thing that does happen with these is there's a little bit of a delay between, hey, I've sent off my check to the government for $200, and, hey, I get to take my item home.
Yeah, that's correct. It's right now, and Kyle might know this better than I do, it's about 6 months,
okay.
Last I heard.
Give or take.
Yeah. And so, your dealer is going to be someone who knows more about the actual practical process of getting the gun than someone like me. I know the legality of it. But they, you know, someone like Kyle deals with this stuff every day. So someone like him, go to his shop, ask him those questions. He can help you out.
Yeah, and we do the Form 4 and everything for everybody. So if there's something you want, we do transfers or we've got a couple of, we've got actually a bunch of items in the store that you could look at least get an idea if you wanted to make a purchase.
All right. Time for one more question, Derek?
Yeah, go ahead.
We've got somebody. Let's see here. John, you've got a question about the ATF.
Thanks for taking my call, guys. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
About a year and a half ago, I was in Kentucky. I went into a gun store. I bought a shotgun, pump shotgun with a pistol grip on it. It was real cheap and kind of a on-the-fly buy, but I did it legally, and I bought the shotgun. I brought it home, and about a week later, I bought another shotgun, a 16-gauge older shotgun from the same store. Well, then about 2 months later, an ATF agent came to my house and told me that I'd had a suspended sentence from years earlier in Kentucky, about 4 or 5 years earlier, that I'd met the qualifications for the suspension of the sentence, but he didn't really explain to me what I needed to do, and he told me I needed to get the guns out of my house. He said he wasn't going to confiscate them, but he wanted me to give them to someone legal. And it was a police officer and an ATF agent. He'd come all the way to my house in Cincinnati from Lexington to tell me this. But I passed the check. You know, I waited 3 days to get the gun, and it took a couple days, and you know, they let me take the guns home from the store, but then, like I said, an ATF agent showed
right.
up.
Well, a few things real quick, sir. One, ATF has field offices, so him coming from Lexington's not that abnormal, and they always do show up with local law enforcement. Two, I can't give you any advice as far as your Kentucky conviction. I'm not licensed in that state, so it's hard for me to tell you as far as the Kentucky conviction, how it affects your gun rights.
But it was a suspended sentence for like a
I don't even know what that means because we don't necessarily have that in Ohio.
Me neither.
So I couldn't tell you because I'm not a licensed attorney in Kentucky. And then three, as far as the NICS check, it's wrong all the time. So when a client tells me, well, I passed the background check, I tell them it doesn't matter. It really does not matter. because it's always wrong.
And it's funny, too, when we get calls back, and like I said at the beginning of the show, I do work at Kyle's. We get calls back from people that have gotten denied, they've gotten denied, and the first thing they ask is, hey, did you transfer that firearm? It's like, well, no, we didn't. God love them, ATF. I'm sure they're trying hard, but not always right when they do stuff. Best suggestion, contact a lawyer down in Kentucky that's going to be a little more familiar with local law and is going to be able to give you advice. As much as I'm sure Derek would like to be able to help you, he's not going to want to give you false information either. Going to bounce back to the Title II stuff just for another minute or two. Actually looks like we're getting low on time already. Quick hour. You hear people say, need gets brought up a lot when we're talking about guns and other things in general. What's the biggest reason you see people doing the Title II stuff out of curiosity? Just fun, pretty much? Or
I get it mixed. Some of my favorite clients are the ones that come in, they had a career in construction or surveying, and they're losing their hearing. So they purposely get suppressors, either for that or they're being courteous and they don't want their neighbors to wake up when they're shooting or whatever it is because they have elderly neighbors. So there is a lot of practical reasons they will get suppressors. Outside of that, it's a hobby a lot of times. They're just something that they're interested in, like classic cars would be a hobby.
Right, and it's funny you mentioned that. There's, and I know you're not going to comment way outside of your demands, but over in Europe, incredibly hard to get a gun. But tune in next week. We'll be talking to Joe Eaton from Buckeye Firearms Association about the legislative process and what our elected officials are currently working on. Should be an interesting interview. Thanks to Derek, OhioGunLawyer.com. We'll see you next Sunday, 7 p.m., right here on 55 KRC. Check us out, BallisticRadio.com. Like our Facebook page, Facebook.com/BallisticRadio. Thanks for tuning in on 55 KRC, the talk station.